Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on November 13th, Wednesday. Fun show coming up. John Murray, Mr. Executive Director from the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, is going to join us. And Paul Stone returns. He was with us, I believe, a month ago on this podcast, so he'll be back. He has four plays in college football. I have a bunch. And a really interesting card, Travis. Got your Buckeyes laying a 50-burger plus. Got Northwestern laying 40-plus, which is just mind-boggling considering how inept their offense has been and what to make of some of these flat spots. You know, Alabama off a loss, Penn State off a loss. So a lot of interesting betting and handicap storylines, if you will. But, gosh. And then we got Michigan State. Who you got in that game?
Michigan State's a debacle. An absolute just, I mean, D'Antonio just basically moved around, rearranged the chairs in Titanic after the offseason. Like, giving your coaches just new jobs doesn't fix anything if they're bad. He needs to get rid of all his coaches, but he might be getting fired too. So, who knows?
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all.
And I love him.
But I was just also trying to get you to say the word Michigan.
No. Michigan State. Well, I will say that, but that's it.
Can we just edit the state out?
Oh, actually, I do the editing.
You're in charge of the editing. Okay, let's get to it. Paul Stone second, and we'll lead off with John Murray.
Kicking is for losers.
Well, that is something that Ed Orgeron believes because he was very aggressive down the stretch to seal the win, and an impressive win by the Tigers as we bring in Mr. Director John Murray. How are you, sir?
I'm good, and I was going to say, too, I thought the final score was a little bit misleading in the Alabama game. I thought LSU won even more comfortably than that score would indicate.
Yeah, a lot of fourth down conversions by the Tide to get back into it, and I believe LSU went scoreless in the third, sort of playing prevent victory, as they say. But that's okay. When you have that big of a lead, it's understandable certain things, and then give Alabama credit for making some plays on defense. But sure. I was very pleased with how the Tigers closed the game. Joe Burrow even did the quick snap with the 2.5 minutes to go to get that first down and just a couple other plays. It was really just just overwhelmingly impressive performance by LSU. And question is, how did the book do?
Not so good, actually. LSU money line was a very popular play, and we can talk about that a little bit today and on the NFL show, but I know you love those square dogs, and there's a lot of square dogs this week and a lot of square dogs that won and won outright in some cases. So it was kind of a weird weekend for the books in that regard. We would have done better if Alabama had won the game but not covered. LSU covering was not an ideal outcome for us.
And as we learned in the first year of the college football playoff with Ohio State losing at home to Virginia Tech in September, it is not the BCS. The committee moves people. For example, Ohio State wins by a million and falls in the ranking. So it's a very fluid situation. And so I imagine you guys are well aware of Alabama's potential to still get into the playoff and win the national championship. So you're not affecting the odds too much.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you know, Ed and I were talking on Sunday morning about reopening up the college football future book, Ed Sammons and myself. And we noticed that there were books in other places, let's call them, that had Alabama at 20-1. I said, that's an absolutely terrible number. There's no way they should be 20-1 because Alabama could absolutely get back into the top four with a couple things going their way. And if they do, they'll be at best a small underdog in these games against Ohio State, LSU, Clemson. You got to think that Tua Tagovailoa was not 100% on Saturday, and maybe he would be by the time those games rolled around.
I can't believe books are still doing that.
Yeah, I was shocked by that. And it was a number, let's just say it was a number none of us had access to here in Nevada. But we opened them at 6-1, Alabama. We reopened them at 6-1, and we still have them at 6-1. And look, Ohio State would be favored against Alabama. I think Clemson would probably be a small favorite against Alabama. But it's not like these teams would be huge favorites against the Tide. And Alabama would be favored against anybody other than Ohio State, Clemson, and LSU. They'd be pretty good-sized favorites against Oklahoma, Georgia, and if you want to go even further, the Pac-12 teams, Penn State, and I'd say close to a pick 'em against LSU, maybe even a small favorite.
Really, you'd even favor them? See, I'm kind of annoyed at myself just because I liked the over all week, and there's some other games throughout the year that I've liked that I've laid off because I just respect so many people on the opposite side. Now, they've also prevented some losses, don't get me wrong. But that was a game where I just think when you have that many playmakers on offense, it's really hard for these defenses. I mean, these defenses look smothering when they face inferior opponents. And Alabama's, you know, kind of having a down year. So I'm not surprised by the shootout nature of it. Now, the punt return, things like that, the game got away.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised that these offenses put up points.
Well, we saw money early in the week on the under in that game. And then we saw like really sharp groups coming back the other way on Friday, I think. They went over 62.5, and I believe we closed at 65.5. So definitely a head fake to move that number down. The public was actually on the under in that game. Very strange betting game where the public liked the under and they liked the dog, at least on the money line. There were certainly some Alabama point spread bets as well, but it wasn't really an ideal result for us. But having the game go under was better than going over.
Well, it was just an awesome game, living up to the billing, so to speak.
Oh yeah,
and
it was a great game. A great college football game, and hopefully a preview of what we can expect in the playoff when we get three or four of these teams in there against each other. The college football playoff this year should be great. But I'm telling you, don't forget about Clemson now. No one's talking about Clemson.
I am. Stanford Steve teases me every week. He's like, you haven't given up. I'm like, nope.
Don't give up. Stick to your guns there on that one, because everyone's talking about Alabama and LSU and Ohio State and Penn State and Georgia because they're all playing each other, and I get it. But I feel like everyone's forgetting about Clemson because they're just sort of off on their own, smashing these teams that have no chance against them. I'd be careful writing those guys off. I really would.
Well, and do you want your eventual national champion like peaking in September?
No. And you know, you mentioned it. Ohio State is great defensively for sure, but Alabama and LSU both have clear deficiencies on that side of the ball, especially Alabama. Clemson is very, very good defensively. So, and they've got a quarterback that I still think will be the first overall pick in the draft in 2 years. So, and playmakers really all over the place on offense. So I'd be careful writing off Clemson, and we're in a great position in our future book on Clemson. That'd be a team we would love to see win it all.
Speaking of which, how are you handling this weekend's game?
Which game are we talking about? Oh, the Ohio State game. So everybody wanted to know what the point spread would be on this game, this Ohio State game. I've never seen a point spread this high on a conference game, certainly a conference road game. We opened 51.5, and we saw guys lay 51.5 and lay 52 on this game. Sharp guys, I should mention. And we're all the way up to 53 on the Buckeyes here on the road at Rutgers.
I don't know how
total of it. Total of 61.5, man. So we will not be allowing over favorite and over or dog and under parlays on this game. Believe it or not. So yeah, it's
first half.
It's a weird game for sure. Ohio State can basically name the score. Right, and Ohio State was one of the games last week where we really got beat up on because we had guys betting the first half, guys betting the second half, guys betting the game. They covered all three of those against Maryland. So hopefully Rutgers can hang tough for us this Saturday. Should be a great, great college football game.
You don't have a first half line, I know, but what are you thinking?
No, we'll get it up. I mean, I don't know, high 30s, I guess. I don't even know. We've never had a conference game.
They're perfect against the spread in the first half this year.
Still? Oh, yeah, that's true. They covered against Maryland. Yeah, you're right.
They got lucky, kick up 14-0.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we really needed them. Or I'm sorry, we needed Maryland in the first half. On Saturday, we had a big bet come in on Ohio State, so we were actually paying attention to that first half. If you can believe it. It looks like Pinnacle's got 31.5, so not too high. There you go.
I think you have.
I don't see anybody else.
How many first downs is Rutgers going to get?
I don't see anybody else with it up right now, unless I'm looking at, 31.5 with a total of 35.5. We usually put up our college football first halves on Wednesdays, actually, so we should have that up later today.
So I have to take team total first half under for Rutgers.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them to score. So basically, if you bet under, it's like almost a yes-no bet of will they score. Or no, it is.
Is it a 3.5 or is it a 2.5?
I guess it's 2.5.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on your book, I guess, what spread and total they use. We don't have first half team totals in college football, but it would depend on what numbers your book uses.
Travis, wherever what do you think on this one? Would you go under 2.5 for a team total with the Scarlet Knights?
I'm never taking anything that has Rutgers' name attached to it.
So you would go under, like, yeah. Rutgers not to score. Yeah, I think it sounds crazy, but like you look at the game, it's like I'm talking about, like they may not get over 2.5 first downs.
Yeah, I actually thought that. I mean, it sounds completely ridiculous, but I actually thought the first half spread would be a little higher than that, just because I don't see how Rutgers could ever score, and it just depends on how motivated Ohio State is, really, right? I mean, like, are they going to be doing onside kicks like they did against Maryland? Are they going to be? I feel like that game will be 14-0 with 10 minutes left in the first quarter.
Well, I was.
It just depends
argue,
on. It like, depends on how motivated Ohio State
is. Them, right? An onside kick would hurt them because they'd get the ball at midfield, whereas if you just kick it deep. You can advance a punt when you field it at midfield.
Don't you think Rutgers should just, if they ever have the opportunity to kick off, should just do onside kicks
yes. And
just go for it on every fourth down? I mean, I made fun of it on Saturday. Maryland punted from midfield down 28-0, and I tweeted that now it's going to have to be an 85-yard touchdown drive instead of a 50-yard touchdown drive for Ohio State. And sure enough, they went right down the field and scored a touchdown to make it 35-0. But like, if you're down 28-0 and your defense clearly can't stop the other team from scoring, why are you punting from midfield on 4th-and-4? I just don't understand. Why even show up for the game?
Kicking is for losers.
They have not figured it out yet. They have not figured it out.
Don't even show up for the game if you're going to do that. They're not going to win. I understand, but at least try to win.
One would think, yes.
That's what I think, Doug.
I don't have the stat in front of me, but it is like historic that you have a team laying this many points on the road.
I don't think I've ever seen it in a road conference game. I really don't. I can't imagine it ever happening before.
What do you make of, let's keep it in the conference, Northwestern laying that kind of lumber?
That was a game where we actually saw a decent amount of handle last week was Northwestern-Purdue. There's a lot
Even
of bets
I
on the
bet.
Under. The Northwestern-Purdue game, why is that?
Well, I just didn't know what to expect, and I've been literally had action on every Northwestern game this year.
We had a lot of under money in that game. As far as this week's game is concerned, not really any action either way. I mean, we opened 39 with Northwestern. We've seen it drift up to 40.5 here, but it's really just because of us moving with the market. We did have one respected player went over 56. We've got a total of 56.5, but I don't think it's going to be a game. Like, as crazy as it sounds, the Ohio State-Rutgers game will actually be a pretty high-handle game because it's Ohio State. The UMass-Northwestern game will not be a high-handle game. It'll just come and go.
You know, we have to do picks for ESPN.com's chalk section. I think I might be on UMass team total over 8 or whatever it is.
Yeah, It is funny to see a team like Northwestern laying that many points.
It's insane.
What's going on in college football? Is there no parity this year in college football? Is that what this is coming down to here?
Well, yeah.
I hear every week I hear the same thing from every talking head. Like, they basically say that every team hasn't played anyone this year. And it's like, well, everyone, like, we're into the middle of November here. Like, you should have played somebody by now.
Well, on this very podcast, beginning of the year, Travis, you might remember, Brad Edwards came in here and said, there's only 5 teams that can win it all. That's it. He's like, all these like 50-1 tickets, 100-1 tickets are pointless. Like, it's just throwing your money. Because even if they get to the playoff, they'll be like Michigan State did against Alabama a couple years ago. Even Notre Dame against Clemson last year, although I think that game was a lot closer than the final score indicates. So he's just like, all these tickets are waste. He's like, there are like 5-6 teams that can win it all. That's it.
Yeah, I think he's right, and that's usually true in a lot of future books. Exactly what he said is true, and that's usually why the books hold so much money in those pools.
Okay, so let's get to the sharp plays. You mentioned you took some respected money on Ohio State. What else?
Yeah, I don't know if I can lay that one, but yes, we did. And we took respected money on Ohio State last week, by the way, and that got there pretty easily, actually. So maybe it is. Maybe it's easier than it looks. Here's one for Wednesday night. I think it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Bowling Green. These guys took 18. Bowling Green is at Miami of Ohio. It's tonight.
Little Maxion.
And right now we're down to 17. So if you want a little bit of Maxion on your Wednesday, DK, okay. Bowling Green tonight.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to mooch a best bet there for the show.
What else you got?
I like it.
And by the way, we should recap last week. You did Ohio State minus 42. You mentioned Baylor got there.
Crazy game. Can I make a joke about that rule where the TCU's touchdown, where the kid landed, his hand landed inbounds?
Yeah, John Madden coined it. One hand equals 2 feet. It came from a podcast. It's kind of famous.
I know that's the rule, but does anyone out there think that makes sense? That neither of your feet land in bounds, but it's a touchdown? I know that's the rule. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying, how in the world does that make any sense?
By the way, it was a joke. It's one knee equals 2 feet. But
also one cheek equals 2 feet.
Yeah. And that's like a shin, too. If you get the shin down, too.
What if you just get one of your fingers to touchdown in bounds? Is that a touchdown?
I don't know. It cost me on the second half under.
Yeah, that was a crazy game. Baylor's 9-0. Nothing to really report on the Baylor-Oklahoma game. That's Saturday night in Waco. But Matt Rhule, just a tremendous job there. But, yeah, we did see sharp money on Baylor last week, early in the week.
Right, and then Oklahoma didn't get there, excuse me. Texas
Oklahoma took their foot off the gas, Doug. They were on cruise control, and then they really slowed up late and almost cost them the game. I don't know how they didn't call pass interference on Oklahoma on that 2-point conversion.
I'm okay with it.
Clearly,
I was okay with it.
I don't know, man. Well, I thought the kid got mugged on that play. I don't know how they didn't call that.
Sparty was another place you took action. I was not buying that one. I've been fading them all year, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the greatest collapses I've ever seen in college football. They got outscored 27-3 in the fourth quarter by Illinois in East Lansing. My God, that was just they were up by a touchdown and they were driving late in the game, Michigan State, and they threw a pick six, and the Illinois kid missed the extra point. It was one of the craziest games I've ever seen. Illinois was a play, by the way. We had about a 3.5-1 ticket count on Illinois. And the number actually went from 14.5. We closed 16, and Illinois won the game outright. It was a weird week where a lot of these dogs that the public was backing, like Illinois, like LSU, and especially the Seahawks on Monday Night Football, all got there, and it really cost us.
So that's what's interesting. Like, people were tweeting at me for the bat signal, and the public on the dog and winning is not like that crazy. It's just surprising, but when the number goes the opposite direction, when we see reverse line movement, that's when it's really interesting.
And Illinois was a textbook example of that this week. And they were down 28-3.
Yep.
Just a shocking, shocking comeback by the Illini. Full credit, though, to Lovie Smith. Lovie Smith now has won in East Lansing. He beat Wisconsin a few weeks ago. He's got Illinois bowl eligible. I made some Lovie Smith jokes in the offseason, and certainly I'll give him credit for the success his team has had this year. You got to give it to him.
Don't underestimate the beard.
I guess.
Four straight wins. They're going bowling. Yeah. So any sharp action for the Michigan State game?
No, nothing there, but I can run through a few more of these. Friday night, they took 2.5 and 1.5 with Fresno State. That game's now a pick 'em. They are on the road at San Diego State. Early Saturday, here's one that's moved a lot, though. These guys laid 3.5, and then they laid 4.5 with Tulane. Tulane now a 6-point favorite at Temple. And that was one we saw sharp money come in last week on South Florida against Temple. And South Florida actually closed favorite in that game, but didn't get there.
I'm surprised anyone's backing South Florida that much these days.
Yeah, that's a team we've seen these guys betting on them a lot this year when they've been home dogs, and they seem to like never get there. So maybe it's time to find somewhere else to put your money.
Well, they are 5-4 ATS this year, so maybe I shouldn't be so critical.
Yeah, that's better than I would have thought, too, because I feel like every time this year that I've said, hey, I see sharp money on South Florida, I feel like they've been getting crushed. So
yeah, and first impression of just getting steamrolled against Whiskey in the opener.
I think that was one of them, man.
You guys took sharp money. It was crazy.
Here's one, a road dog here. They took 11 with Syracuse. Syracuse is at Duke on Saturday, and that line is now down to 10.
Duke's not great in, like, the big favorite role typically, but I don't know if I can get
– I feel like you don't like it. I can sense that you're not on board with this play. Team.
But I wouldn't lay it either. How about that?
Okay.
Anything else?
Yeah, a couple more road favorites here. One more road favorite, excuse me, Kentucky. They laid 8.5 and 9 with Kentucky. They're on the road at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, talk about a program that's had the wheels come off this season. Just a dreadful year for the Commodores.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
I believe that.
That's on the short that lines list of games for me.
Yeah, that line is up to 10 now, by the way. So they laid 8.5 and 9 here with Kentucky.
Yeah, I was on Tennessee last week because I thought the Kentucky score against Georgia was a little misleading given the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And Tennessee's been playing pretty well of late, but it's not like Kentucky's bad like Vanderbilt. I think Vandy's pretty awful.
Yeah, no, they are. They and you got to give credit to Coach James Franklin, who I've joked about for his conservative nature in the past, but when he was at Vanderbilt, they had some great seasons there. And since he's left, they were okay initially. Right after he left, they were still okay. But this program has sunk all the way back down to the depths of before he got there. It's always the mark of a great coach when the coach leaves and the program goes to, let's say, crap.
Right.
And
but they
unfortunately,
say differently for CEOs. They say like if you've built a company with the right sort of staff in place, that if you leave, it can still be successful.
Well, usually what I see with a really good coach is the team gets a little bit worse every year after he's gone, and that's exactly what we've seen with Vanderbilt. Like, just a gradual decline each year since Coach Franklin left there. Like, they actually were okay the first year with Derek Mason there, and they've just gradually gotten a little worse every year, and that really speaks to the job that Franklin and his staff did there.
It's a good point. It's a good point. He did do a wonderful job down there.
Yeah,
in Nashville. Anything else?
Yeah, I'll give you two more home favorites here. First one's in the SEC. They laid 10. They laid 11 with Texas A&M. Texas A&M now an 11.5-point favorite in College Station against South Carolina.
Interesting.
And this one, I don't really have anything to add on to it. I'm just reporting the bet. They laid 12.5 and 13 with Middle Tennessee State. Middle Tennessee State now a 14.5-point favorite at home against Rice.
Yeah, Rice is pretty bad. We know that.
Yeah, Rice is not good.
Okay.
Rice is but really, nothing in terms of heavy action on the real high-profile games this week. Georgia-Auburn right now, there's some more tickets and money on the Bulldogs, but nothing really noteworthy. That's what we expect in that role, the cheap road favorite there, talking about Georgia. We did take one big bet on Nebraska plus 14 from a house player. We're still at 14 on that game. We'll probably need Nebraska.
How does player feel when you take a big bet and they don't move it?
I don't know. You think they'd be, like, offended by that?
It's a little bit of a truth serum.
Yeah, I don't know. There's really nothing to report on Oklahoma-Baylor yet either, to be honest with you. It's pretty divided action. We'll need Baylor by the time the game kicks off. But nothing really noteworthy. We did have one guy go over 67 in that game, a guy that I respect. And that total is now 68.
Baylor seems been weird the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't know how they keep hanging on, man. You know, they made a long field goal on Saturday to force overtime. And then, you know, it looked like they had the game won. TCU with the touchdown pass that I joked about earlier. But then I thought Baylor was very lucky. They wiped a TCU touchdown off the board, and I believe that was in triple overtime, if I remember correctly.
They stepped out of bounds. They said
He stepped out of bounds, and then they held him there from inside the 5-yard line. So credit to their defense, obviously. But that was a game that certainly could have gone the other way quite easily.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain about my second half under B because I did have Baylor as well. So.
Okay. College football, man, you know, crazy things happen.
At the end of regulation, before that field goal, there was a post wide open, and he misses it. Like, it's a touchdown.
Yeah, that's true. Brewer missed it. You're right. Brewer missed him for what was like a gimme touchdown. That's absolutely true. I forgot about that.
It looks like a gimme to us, but sometimes, and you know, I only know this listening to the play by or the color analysts, is that sometimes they flatten out the posts to give more separation from the defender. So, like, I don't know what the play call was. I mean, they make it look easy because they put air under it. I think he didn't put enough air into it, Brewer.
You don't? Do you think you could have made that throw? Like I said, it was a gimme. So
how far was it?
I don't know. I felt like it was about 30 yards, maybe.
Yes, I could have made it.
Okay, I think I could have made it too. No problem.
It depends. Like the defense looks far away. Problem is, like, if I threw it, the defender would catch it. Like, I'd underthrow it. You know, like the timing.
Yeah.
But it's funny. Well, it wouldn't be that argument with some buddies of mine and about how far I can throw a football. Like, I think we could all throw a football pretty far. Like, I can throw it like almost 50 yards. But
50 yards? No way.
I said almost. So like 40, 45.
Okay.
Maybe.
I think you could probably throw
but
it 40
like,
yards.
It would be like running up, chucking it.
Yeah.
You know, and getting and the distance not, with like the air, like the height, you know, like getting more.
You're not trying for accuracy, right? You're
correct.
Just chucking it as
like,
far as you can.
Exactly. Like wind up,
yeah,
running
up. You're probably right. I got into an argument with another sportsbook director in this city. I'm not going to name him. But he said that he thought he would win a foot race, a 40-yard dash, against every single lineman in the NFL. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? And he's like, well, those guys are huge. They weigh 300 pounds. And I was like, I know that. But they're also like 24 years old. And they're world-class athletes. And you're 40.
Yeah. That's
so. No, this guy.
He could be really
fast.
I need to see the person in order to.
He's not, I'm not saying he's not, and that's that was where the argument went off. This was at a bar, by the way, but that was where the argument went off the rails. I never once said that he wasn't fast or anything like that. I just said he wasn't as fast as an NFL player in his early 20s. That's all. I'm going to stick with that argument.
What do these linemen run, like fives?
Well, technically, Myles Garrett is an NFL lineman, right? I mean, he's a defensive end. Do you think that you could outrun Myles Garrett?
No.
I don't.
I was thinking O-line, some of the big O-line.
I mean, Nick Bosa is an NFL lineman. I mean, he looks pretty fast to me. I don't know.
This is good. Maybe this should have been the penalty for the baby bankroll bonanza.
Yeah, but no, I think it's a good day of college football. There's a handful of games I'm excited about. I think Georgia-Auburn should be really good. I want to watch Oklahoma-Baylor. Some pretty good games. And there's a morbid curiosity with that Ohio State-Rutgers game. Like, anything could really happen. If Ohio State wanted to be, they could be up 49-0 at halftime.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is, like, if you had told me, because Maryland last year gave Ohio State a little bit of a scare. Travis, didn't it go to, like, overtime or something? Last year, Ohio State and Maryland?
Let's not talk about that game.
Okay, so I think it did. So I was a little worried last week.
They won the game. You can't even talk about a game you won.
Yeah, but it was because they went for two.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was a little apprehensive last week, even though Maryland's been bad this year. I was a little like, all right. You know, but Rutgers is pitiful. Like, Rutgers is legit pitiful.
Oh, they're so bad, man. So when the number came out 50.5, 51 on Saturday or Sunday, excuse me, I actually said to the guys I thought it seemed light. I'm not going to lay it because it's just ridiculous. But these numbers seem light. Ohio State can name their score. This is not a level playing field here.
And the backups are not going to be exactly running the power eye. Like, they're going to want to get their reps in against, like,
sure,
Rutgers backups or even Rutgers starters. Like, I mean, just look what they've done. They've lost in conference 38-10, 42-7, 35-0, 48-7, 52-0, 30-0. I mean, they've scored, what, 17 points in conference play?
Yeah.
That number's
I mean, this is a team that was, I think they were getting 8 at home against Liberty a few weeks ago, about a month ago.
And won.
It's crazy, man. Yeah, they won that game. But that just shows you how bad their power rating number is.
Okay. All right, my man. Good stuff as always. Appreciate the insight, and go work on that 40 time. It's all about starting the block. You got to start strong out of the block.
Yeah, you're right. If I really work hard on it, I think I could beat Nick Bosa by the end of the year.
All right, bud. Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Truer words were never spoken, thanks to Bob Lee. And let's now welcome in professional bettor Paul Stone. Good to have you on the back on the podcast here, Paul.
Doug, great to be with you. I think we're all the way to week 12 now, so been a great college football season to this point, and looking forward to some more great action this weekend.
Me too. Much better card, so to speak. Although I liked last weekend's card. I shouldn't say that. Obviously, LSU-Bama dominated all the headlines, but there were some other good games, and we have some really good ones coming up. There's a big responsibility for you, Paul. I need to talk out my picks, flush it out before I finalize my plays, and that's a big responsibility on your shoulders. Are you up to the task?
I am. Do you want, Doug, do you prefer confirmation regardless of my opinion on the game, or you want me to just
give me my true feelings? True feelings. Just let it out. This is a process, and this the podcast is a weekly sort of giant step in this process. It's a very important role. We need your unfiltered takes.
I will do my best.
All right, so let's first get you on the T-box because you are the guest, and you are based in Texas, right? And you know the Big 12. We've talked a lot of Big 12 in the past here on the pod. So I want to get your opinion on this Oklahoma Baylor game.
Yeah, I tell you, this is an interesting game. You look at two teams. First of all, looking at the homestanding Bears, you know they're off back-to-back narrow escapes the last two games. They nipped West Virginia there in Waco at home a couple of Thursdays ago, and then last week escaped in overtime at TCU. And then you look on the opposite sideline, and Oklahoma also enters off a narrow escape of its own as Iowa State came within a failed two-point conversion of erasing a 21-point Sooners lead that they took into the fourth quarter. So the final there, Oklahoma 42, Iowa State 41. Had Iowa State been successful on that two-point conversion, the Sooners are entering this game in Waco on Saturday on a two-game losing streak, and obviously they're not since they won the game. But looking at Oklahoma, you know, they're an outstanding team, no question about it. But at the same time, I don't think they're quite up to the standards of the past two seasons. I don't think they're quite as good as those Oklahoma teams. You've got ESPN Game Day coming to Waco, coming to the banks of the Brazos River for just the third time in program history. That atmosphere there is going to be electric. I don't think Baylor's played its best football yet. Their offense really hadn't quite clicked as much as I thought it would and others thought it would. I actually made this number 6.5. You're seeing 10 out there pretty much universally. Give me Baylor. Give me the 10 points over Oklahoma on Saturday.
What about does Baylor hanging on by a thread lately?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a little bit concerning without question. You know, their offense, they've got a great quarterback in Charlie Brewer, whose dad, actually, Robert Brewer, played at the University of Texas in the early 1980s. They've got receivers on the on the perimeter that are really big-time guys, one of those being Mims. I'm surprised, really, offensively, that they haven't scored more points and gained more yards, to be blunt about it. And really, their defense, which lost linebacker Clay Johnston a couple weeks ago, who was really the heart and soul of that unit, their defense has kind of carried the day for the most part, which is a little bit of a role reversal for the Bears. So got to be a little bit concerning coming into this game that they have been – you know, hanging on by a thread, so to speak. But with game day there, I think truly, you know, the way I look at a schedule, you've got 13, or really 12 regular season games. So you've got almost 8%, or a little over 8%, rather, if you weigh those games equally, of effort to give in each of those games. Obviously, in some games, you're going to give a little bit less than 8%. In other games, you might get, you know, 10, 12, 14% of your total 100%. And I think this is going to be one of those games where I like to say a team's collective psyche is going to be totally invested. Baylor's going to be all in. I think we see a great effort from Baylor on Saturday.
Good, good. And that's the thing. But there are narratives out there. Like sometimes with game day and all the commotion, especially for a program that's not accustomed to it, like maybe last week Alabama, that sometimes it can be a net negative. Any concern there?
You know, not really. I think historically, and I've looked at this a little bit to see how those teams, and you probably have as well, being part of the team there at ESPN, but I think teams at home tend to do, historically, over the large sample size, tend to do well when game day's there. And certainly Alabama last week, it was not the case. You know, they were pretty much outclassed by LSU, but I think in this case, I think it does benefit Baylor. I like what, you know, love what Matt Rule's done there, the mess that he inherited that was left behind and the way he transitioned and handled all the difficult questions, didn't shy away from it, took responsibility, was the best man for the PR part of the job, and now he's proven to be the best man for the on-the-field part of the job. So Baylor's a, you know, he's done just an incredible effort there, and I think we're going to see, again, a big-time showing by Baylor against the Sooners on Saturday.
Could not agree more with what Matt Rhule, your assessment of what Matt Rhule has done. It is nothing short of amazing. All right, my first play, and speaking of narratives, is sort of the rivalry game. You got to throw out the records, and sometimes that's appropriate. But with this Michigan-Michigan State game, I have to lay the 13.5 with the Wolverines. I've been kind of fading Sparty basically every game this year. There's been this perception that D'Antonio will get the guys back on track and all this stuff, and I agree, and I like him as a coach. I just think this team is definitely just inferior than years past, especially the defense. It's overrated, and the offense continues to be inept. There's just no part of me that wants Sparty, especially after that collapse, and people will say, well, they're going to come to play in this game. But that would suggest that they weren't coming to play in previous games like Iowa, Penn State, Ohio State, and they did, and they just weren't good enough. And I think the Wolverines bury them here at the Big House.
I'll tell you, first of all, Doug, if you've been fading Sparty pretty much all season, I might need to ask you for a low-interest loan because you've made some money there. Looking at Sparty, their last 12 games, which goes into last season as well, versus Power 5 opponents against the spread, they're just 2-10 against the spread, their last 12 versus Power 5. Not only are they a train wreck on the field, currently a four-game losing streak, including last year's last week's collapse against Illinois, they've lost, I believe, now four in a row. You know, not only, again, a train wreck on the field, but a train wreck off the field. The program's in total disarray, not only the athletic program, but the total organization pretty much as a whole is under great scrutiny right now. As you kind of alluded to, if anything can wake up Sparty, it would be, you know, hated rival Michigan. But at the same time, again, not, you know, supporting you just to be supporting you. I believe in it. You can't just flip a switch. You know, they've had ample opportunity to wake up and to get the ship righted, and it just hadn't happened. And I'm not involved yet in this game, but certainly the only way I could go would be Michigan or nothing, because you just can't. At this time, at this point in the season, based on the data that we have this year, just can't support Michigan State.
And it's funny, one guy I was texting last night, a pretty sharp guy, says, he goes, look, Sharps have been on Sparty all year. And, of course, they're not going to this weekend, and this will be the time they cover. So just be careful there. Just
right. I mean, if they've been on them all year, too, they might have run out of money. Yeah. So that might be part of it, too.
Let's go back to the great state of Texas with you. And the Longhorns are playing Iowa State. It's a touchdown spread here. What do you got?
You know, this is an interesting game. You've got a Texas team that has underperformed for the most part this year. But the Longhorns, they're getting healthier on defense, especially in the back end of the defense where they've been a little bit vulnerable and they've had to play some young people. Going to get defensive back Chris Brown back, a guy who's kind of a hybrid safety type guy, DeMarvian Overshawn, might be back as well. Jeffrey McCulloch, a linebacker who's missed the last few weeks, is possibly going to return. And then offensively, a guy we only saw in the opener against Louisiana Tech, true freshman Jordan Whittington, who was a big-time star in the spring for the Longhorns, kind of going to be like a Swiss Army knife on offense. He's going to play some tailback, going to play some wide receiver, jet sweeps, those types of things. He's only played one game. To preserve the year, the redshirt year, he can only play three more. So they might rest in this game and then playing the final three games, which would be, you know, anticipating they're going to get in a bowl game, which they are bowl eligible. So they might sit out Whittington, but he might be available as well against Iowa State, which would be a big plus for the offense. Talked about it probably ad nauseum on your podcast, but Tom Herman, as an underdog at both Houston and Texas, a combined 9-2 against the spread. As an underdog, that includes 7 outright victories. You take it back a little bit further when he was offensive coordinator at Ohio State, and he performed well as an underdog as the OC at Ohio State as well. You look at this series historically, and this is one of those series that has been dominated by Texas, as you might expect. So sometimes it can be a little bit difficult, the role reversal. Texas has won 14 of the 16 meetings. The last time that Iowa State won was back in 2015 in Ames. Also won as like a 21-point underdog in 2010 there in Austin. I believe this is the first time in the history, the 17th year of this series, that Iowa State has actually been favored. So they're in a different role. They've been the underdog historically when facing the Longhorns each and every time. I kind of compare it to heavy is the head that wears the crown. So now they've got to be the favorite. Tom Herman returning home in a way. He was offensive coordinator at Iowa State from 2009 to 2011 before taking the same position at Ohio State. Some may scoff at this comparison, but looking at the Longhorns' defense when they were healthy in week two, obviously Alabama, that's the comparison I'm going to make. Their defense is not one of their better defenses of recent history. Both Alabama and Texas did get torched by Joe Burrow and LSU, but the statistics were pretty comparable. LSU last week against Alabama, 559 yards, 46 points. Against Texas, 573 yards, 45 points. That was when Texas's defense was healthy. Not an impressive performance, but pretty much equal to what Bama did against the same LSU offense. I think Texas getting 7 points is too many. I made it about 3. I like the Longhorns plus 7. Might be down to 6.5 in a lot of places now. I'd still take the 6.5 in Texas.
All right, so you you follow that conference particularly closely. You mentioned Alabama. I want to go there next. Look, this is just a beatdown. I don't know how else to explain it. Look, I know Bama put everything it had into last week's game. I get that, like, logic. And I get that it's, you know, it was a big game, players banged up, but they know what's at stake. They know that they can still make the playoff, all that good stuff. Like, I just don't see, and Mississippi State's bad. Like, they're a bad football team. They've lost 4 straight prior to last week's win at Arkansas. They didn't cover any of those 4, and that was against teams like LSU and A&M and good teams, right? I think Bama just goes in there and just crushes them.
And I can't disagree with you there, Doug. I mean, Alabama still has everything in front of it. If they win the rest of their games, I know a lot of people would be disappointed and cry foul, but I think the Crimson Tide would be in that 4-team playoff. The one thing in anticipating that you were going to talk about this Alabama-Mississippi State game, I looked this up. A little bit surprising to me. Off their last 5 outright, or rather their last 6 outright losses, straight up losses, Alabama's only 1-5 against the spread dating back to 2011. So similar situations to this when their playoff life is kind of on the line. So that was a little bit surprising to me. But like you indicated, this Mississippi State team, not a good football team. Really, whereas you're facing a team like LSU the previous week, LSU's got weapons all over the field. You know, they've got it. You've got to cover every square inch of the football field. Mississippi State's offense is so limited. Their quarterback run is probably their top offensive play. They're not going to be able to expose Alabama's weaknesses on defense nearly at any level as LSU did last week. So I'm kind of like you, even though they haven't performed well recently in a small sample size of 6 games off a straight-up loss, I expect the Crimson Tide to rebound in a big way and beat Mississippi State by, you know, 4 touchdowns plus probably.
Right, and just to kind of further that narrative, so to speak, how many of those were in the college football playoff era? So, like, in 2012 they lost, but the next week they beat Western Carolina 49-0, right? That was still the BCS era. Then 2013, they lost to Auburn in the Iron Bowl, and I believe that was the pick 6. And then they lost to Oklahoma in a bowl game in January. So it's a much different circumstance, so to speak. 2014, they lost to Ole Miss and then barely got by Arkansas the following week. I believe that was the first year of the playoff. So that is an example of where it would be like, all right. But I don't think maybe they knew about, like, loss. Remember that we learned over time that you could lose and still get into the playoff, whereas we were conditioned at the time to the BCS, where you really, like, your season's over when you lose.
Right, and those are good points. Looking at some of my historic logs here, those games you're referencing, you're exactly right. The circumstances do appear to be different, and in the 4-team playoff era, this is a unique situation since I believe it started, like you said, in 2014. So this is unique to most of those situations. So they've still got it all in front of them. Nick's probably not a happy camper this week. I think the offense is going to be able to score against Mississippi State, and I do think they go into Starkville as you do and roll the Bulldogs there.
And style points matter. I mean, we've learned that. We saw that with Dabo Swinney at the end of last game, throwing for it in the final half minute on the goal line and going for blood. Now, granted, they may have been slighted and all that stuff because they were the fifth in the rankings, but, I mean, that was, I think, poor form. But just in general, they need style points, and I don't think they're going to be up 15 or 20 and not go for the jugular. I think they have to.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. I mean, the committee can say what they want about margin of victory, and I think this is correct, that they maybe act like it's been de-emphasized somewhat, but it certainly hasn't. And another thing to consider here is, although Mississippi is a low population state overall, in terms of athletic talent, it is very densely populated with outstanding athletes. In Alabama, since Nick Saban's taken over, has really cut into Mississippi and Mississippi State's market share. So that's another part of the puzzle. They're playing a team that they recruit against for the best athletes in Mississippi. And I think if they can tack another one on for good measure, they'll certainly do it.
I like that. That's good. Good rationale there. Okay, let's go outside the Power Five. Colorado State, Air Force, you have a play on the dog here.
Yes, I do. This is a series that has been dominated by the underdog, at least in recent years. The underdog's covered the last five in this Mountain West rivalry. I've been really, since early summer, even back in the spring, I've been touting this year's Air Force team, all year long, and they've not disappointed me. The Falcons have really played well, right up there with Boise State, I believe, is the class of the Mountain West. But I look at this series, and you look at a Rams team, first of all, they're only going to be playing their third game since October 11th. That's thanks to a pair of midseason buys, and that allows them to be well-rested. They've had extra time to heal those bumps and bruises that everybody's pretty much dealing with this time of year. You look at Colorado State also as a home dog since the start of 2009. Not super impressive, but still a moneymaker, 14-10 against the spread as a home dog. You look at Air Force as a away favorite since the start of 2010. They're 8-17 against the spread. A few things going for the Rams again, repeating some of them. The Rams have won three straight games. They're well-rested, playing their rival. They're catching double digits at home. And they're getting pretty solid play at quarterback as well from Nebraska transfer Patrick O'Brien. So I really like Colorado State here. I made this line actually 7, so I think we're getting a few bonus points here. Take Colorado State and the 10 points over Air Force on Saturday.
Interesting. Yeah, there should be a lot of points in that game, right? I mean, you would think.
Absolutely. You look at the performance of Air Force, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but Colorado State has not done a very good job of slowing down the Air Force option attack through the years. Air Force, like the other service academies, where they're, I hate to say lack of athleticism, but that's probably the best way to phrase it, where it hurts them the most is against passing teams because their cornerbacks are not quite as talented as some of the Division I teams to cover receivers like Colorado State has. And Colorado State's got a big-time receiver. I think their top guy might be Warren Jackson, if I'm not mistaken. He's a guy they're going to have trouble covering. Colorado State's a team that passes more than 50% of the time, so they are a team that passes a high percentage of their offensive plays. So they're going to kind of hit Air Force where they're at their weakest. I don't think Air Force is going to slow that pass attack down much. I don't think Colorado State, as you said, is going to slow Air Force down much. So we've got a high total, I think, of about 61.5, but I do expect a lot of points here on Saturday in Fort Collins.
Interesting. I like it. I like it. That's a fair assessment of the situation, the passing teams and all that. I wouldn't be slighted. Okay, a couple favorites I've mentioned. I got a dog here that, I mean, it's just classic handicapping, right? Penn State off a loss. We see all these teams that have championship aspirations and have these big and have to go play a game the next week. And I have to take Indiana plus 14.5 because I like the Hoosiers. I've been on them a couple times. They're much better than people realize. They're 7-2, and I think Penn State's also got the Ohio State game next week. I just think it's a terrible sandwich spot. It's a flat spot. All signs point to the Hoosiers, and I'll take the 14 and a hook.
I think you've got some good things in your corner that you've spotted in this particular game. Penn State, again, you know, a lot of people don't use the point spread angles as much as I do, and I don't use them all, but I think some are valuable. I think teams as underdogs, how they perform in that role, I think that's something to look at that has credence. I also think how teams perform off a straight-up loss is something that has some value to us as handicappers. Penn State is 4-15 against the spread off a straight-up loss under James Franklin. So they have not responded well in this situation. Tom Allen's obviously got the Hoosiers playing great football. They're bowl eligible. This would be a huge victory for them. And I think, like you, I think two touchdowns, a little bit too much. The spot's not favorable for Penn State. I think Indiana can keep this thing within a couple of touchdowns. So I certainly support you on that one as well.
Slight concern is Aaron Renning is a pro bettor. He's been on the pod before, and he mentioned this about Indiana a couple weeks ago. They've been sort of fluky at times with some of the points they've scored. So I'm a little worried that they just sort of meet their match, so to speak, in this game, and you're looking at like a 21-3 game or something like that. That's a slight concern I have.
Yeah, and Aaron's definitely a quality handicapper, one of the best in the business. And I do, and I don't have it in front of me. I didn't break it down. But Indiana, I think that the years that they've been good in recent history, they've tend to have kind of made their hay, so to speak, against the middling teams in the conference and the lesser teams in the conference, and have continued to struggle for the most part against the better teams in the conference, which certainly, you know, Penn State would be among those teams. But I just think we're kind of got, you know, the perfect storm, like you indicated. It's a sandwich spot for them. Penn State's off a loss. They haven't performed well in that role in recent years. Indiana, another thing that concerns me a little bit, and it's not a huge drop-off because Patrick Ramsey's really played good at quarterback, or Peyton Ramsey, rather, played really good at quarterback for Indiana. But a couple of weeks back, as I'm sure you know, they lost their playmaking quarterback, left-handed Michael Penix Jr., for the rest of the year. And there's certainly a little bit of a dynamic factor that you lose when you replace Penix with Ramsey. But it's not a big drop-off. Ramsey's won a lot of games for Indiana, and it was a close competition coming out of the summer. So I don't see that as being too much of a slide against Indiana. So I do like the situation. I just think it largely favors Indiana this week in State College.
Yeah, it'll be such a grind because I don't think they're going to win the game. So I think it's going to be a tough fourth quarter to sweat out. One more game for you. Mountain West again, Wyoming and Utah State. You like another dog here.
Yeah, you look at, first of all, Wyoming, which is the underdog, catching 6 this week in Logan. Wyoming last week, you know, what a program-defining win it would have been for them. They led most of the game last week before losing at Boise State 20-17 in overtime. You know, they just had that one within their grasp just about the whole way, and then it went to overtime, tied at 17. And Boise kicked a field goal. I believe they had the ball first and kicked a field goal, and then Wyoming did not score and failed on a fourth down pass. You look at Utah State last week, played one of their better games, certainly one of their better offensive games of the year last week, got a 388-yard passing performance from Jordan Love. Love was 30 of 39 at Fresno State. Utah State beat the Bulldogs on the road last week, 37-35. You know, I think entering the year, a lot of handicappers had Utah State perhaps pegged a little too high. They were off 11-win season, really impressive. They were 9-3-1 last year against the spread. They only returned 2 offensive starters, though. One of those was Jordan Love, so optimism ran high. But they lost a little bit too much personnel. Defensively, they suffered a huge blow a few weeks ago when they lost all-conference linebacker David Woodward, a guy who was really the true heart and soul, not only of their defense, but probably their entire team. Lost him to a season-ending knee injury at the end of October. Look at Wyoming. I really like the job that head coach Craig Bohl has done there in Laramie. You've got Tyler Vanderwall at quarterback. He's done a nice job of stepping in there, quarterback for injured quarterback, former starter Sean Chambers, who went down with an injury a few weeks back. But Vanderwall started, I believe, 9 games last year, so he's experienced and he's won football games for the Cowboys. Wyoming's covered 3 straight in this series. They've won 2 of those, 31-17 against the spread as an underdog, as an away underdog, rather, since 2009. I think Wyoming keeps this one close. Take the Cowboys in 6 against Utah State on Saturday.
All right, 4 underdogs for you. Nicely done there. I have one I have a bunch of other options. I'm going to let you pick which one you want to react to because they're all a little wonky. Wazoo to whack Stanford. UMass team total over 8 against Northwestern. Or Ohio State first half yet again, a team that has covered every single first half this year.
If you're asking me to select which one I would opt for out of those, you know, since Ohio State has covered the first half each and every week of the 2019 season, I'm gonna bet on the streak. I'm gonna say take the Buckeyes. It's gonna be a large number. I think the game line minus 51 at Rutgers or something in that neighborhood. So, you know, we're gonna be looking at probably over 4 touchdowns. They're not gonna make it easy on us. It might even be over 30 points. But Ohio State has shown no signs of putting the brakes on. You're talking about style points. You're talking about a quarterback in Justin Fields that has exceeded all expectations this year in Columbus. He's everything that Georgia thought he was when they signed him. And Ohio State is reaping the benefits, an explosive offense with J.K. Dobbins and, again, Fields and the receivers all over the place. I think they're going to put it on Rutgers, and I can see this one being, you know, something to the neighborhood of 38-0 or 42-0 at the half.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I might have a lot of plays. I might have a lot of plays this week, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
I think you've got a good you look like you've got a good menu there, Doug, and I expect you to be bathing in the money come late Saturday night.
I like that, the menu. I like that. All right, my man, I really appreciate the insight, and I know you've got a lot of things going around and moving your schedule to accommodate the taping schedule, so really appreciate it, Paul.
I appreciate you guys having me on, and good luck to everybody out there this weekend.
All right, you too. Be well.
Thank you.
Stop. Hammer time.
Sounds like I might have to break out the hammer on a couple of these, Travis. I like that, the menu, my menu that I'm ordering from.
Just hope it's a good menu. It doesn't come out with any like food poisoning or anything.
I know. I'm a smart guy with my record that I have. It's like 57%-ish on ESPN.com's chalk section. Would just sort of take a knee down the home stretch here. Play it easy. Just go into the locker room with the W for the season. But no, we might roll the dice and get like, sometimes I get a little aggressive. I'll just do first half side and team totals. So I'll try to get 3 wins on one game because, you know, we don't do units or anything like that. So we'll see what I have to do here. By the way, breaking news, Travis, during the taping of this podcast. Yeah, you have to do it in like a Tom Brokaw voice. Chase Young. Only suspended 2 games, not 4. Reduced.
Could you see when you're taping? Did you see any excitement from me? I wasn't sure if I was just like, you know,
you were off in a different space. So did you think he was going to be suspended all 4 games? I did not.
Originally, I did, but then when reading more things into it and whatnot, and facts were starting to come out, it sounded like 2 was the number. But I wasn't sure if they might dip in and go 3.
Well, they got by without him against Maryland. They're going to have to do the same against Rutgers. And then they'll return coincidentally.
The part that I'm a little disappointed in is I wanted to see if voters actually had it in them to vote for him for the Heisman.
So we talked about this on the show, obviously. I thought there was legit chance. I thought there was buzz. Didn't Ndamukong Suh finish 2nd or 3rd? I think he went to New York.
Yeah.
So I think he was top 3.
Tao went to New York.
Ndamukong Suh for the Heisman.
Yeah, and Manti Te'o went to New York too.
Oh, he did. Te'o did too. Excuse me, I didn't hear you the first time. I think there was legit buzz if Burrow had lost, like if Tua was still hurt and it was more wide open.
The one thing that would have helped is like
Tua missing games and Alabama loses maybe to Auburn after beating LSU. I think that he needed a couple things, but Joe Burrow's just been so excellent.
But at least it would have been interesting to at least see if people would even vote, send him to New York. Because I think we're admitting that it's worthy of it, but would the voters actually do it? And now it'll be interesting, and, you know, especially these 2 games he could have racked up. I mean, he could have picked his sack total.
I think there was a legit chance. Definitely to go to New York. I think there was some legit chance to win. I thought the year was shaping up where he had a chance to win it.
Yeah.
With the big games looming, right? But like with the platforms he's going to have.
At least he's still going to have Penn State,
right,
the game, and then if they beat Penn State, then he'd have a matchup in the Big Ten championship game.
All right, so that's what you get. Breaking news on this taped segment.
It's great news for me.
If you will. And great news for Travis, most importantly. All right, we'll be back for the NFL podcast tomorrow. Thanks to everyone. Really appreciate it. I know there's a lot of options out there. Your schedules are very busy. We appreciate all you guys chiming in. And thanks to John Murray and thanks to Paul Stone as well.